Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Grupo Herdez's third quarter 2019 results conference call. Before we begin, I would like to remind you that this call is being recorded and that information discussed today may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's financial and operating performance. All projections are subject to risks and uncertainties, and actual results may differ materially. Please refer to the detailed note in the company's press release regarding forward-looking statements. At this time, I would like to turn it over to Mr. Gerardo Canavati, CFO and CEO of the Frozen Division. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Savi. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us on today's call. In a lackluster economic environment, we managed to grow our top line for the quarter at a 7% rate, surpassing industry dynamics. This growth was based on pricing. Our sales mix helped gross margin expansion, and despite extraordinary expenses, we gained 60 basis points at the EBIT level. As usual, I will now turn the call over to Andrea to discuss quarterly results, and we will take your questions at the end. Andrea?
Thank you, Gerardo. Good morning, everyone. Year on year, net sales increased 7% during the quarter and almost 9% year to date. Growth resulted from the combined effect of price increases that we gradually implemented over the past 12 months, and to a lesser extent, volume growth across all segments. Net sales in the preserved segment were $4.3 billion, which was 6% higher than in the third quarter of last year. Over the 9 months of the year, however, growth was even better at 9%. Net sales in the frozen segment increased by 5% during the quarter and 8% for the first 9 months. Net sales growth was negatively impacted by a rainy season in several parts of the country, and more importantly, due to less promotions. However, at Nutrisa, this was offset to some extent by higher average tickets. In exports, net sales increased 23% in the quarter and 6% for the first 9 months. The driver behind this was a double-digit increase in sales to Megamex, especially in homestyle salsa and mole categories. Consolidated gross margin in the quarter was 39.6%, which is 1 percentage point higher than in the third quarter of 2018. For the first 9 months, the margin dropped almost 1 percentage point to 38.6. This contraction can be explained by the higher sales of tuna recorded in the second quarter. As part of the consolidated gross margin mix, preserves increased 0.7% in the quarter and contracted 1.4 for the first 9 months. In frozen, it expanded by 3.2% in the quarter and more than 1% for the first 9 months. While in exports, it increased 4.2% for the quarter and almost flat for the accumulated figure. Consolidated SG&A in the quarter was 26.8% of net sales, resulting in a slight increase of 0.6 over the same period in 2018. This can be explained by higher freight costs in Mexico and investment in transport and freezer for replacements in the frozen division. EBIT during the quarter was 750 million pesos, 11.6% higher than last year. In the accumulated figure, it was 2.1 billion with a margin of 0.8% lower than in 2018, resulting in 12.9. As a one-off, we recognized 38 million pesos in other income as a net of the sale of one tuna vessel and a provision of accounts receivable on the review for frozen. Excluding other income and the effect of IFRS 16, EBIT for the quarter will have been stable when compared to the same period last year at 13.4%. In the third quarter, our participation or the equity investment in associated companies was 98 million pesos, which continues to be considerably lower than in 2018. For the first 9 months, the drop was 27%. These results are due mainly to higher avocado prices that deteriorated Megamex's gross margin. In this sense, it is important to remember that in the third quarter of last year, we also recorded extraordinary profits for Megamex. So we are comparing with a very tough base. Consolidated net income in the quarter was 461 million pesos, which was almost 10% lower than the previous year. For the first 9 months, the drop was 6.7% to 1.5 billion pesos. Consolidated net margin, however, was 8.3% and 9.4% for the quarter and year to date. These are losses of 1.5 and 1.6% from the previous year. We again attribute these contractions to Megamex performance. As of September 30, consolidated cash was 2.1 billion pesos and is basically flat when compared to the end of last year. Our cash generation remains strong, since despite 647 million in share buybacks since last December, we kept our cash balance stable. Our leverage ratios improved quarter to quarter since our net debt to EBITDA ratio decreased from 1.5 to 1.2 times. At the end of September, we had 6.6 billion in debt with an average life of 4.4 years and an average cost of 8.5%. With that, I will now turn the call over to Gerardo.
Thank you, Andrea. For the frozen segment, what we did was favor profitability rather than growth. We are shifting our portfolio towards more value-added products driven by innovation. As well, due to its DSD nature and complexity, after the extraordinary provision that we recorded this quarter, we have strengthened internal controls that also have slowed down our growth. In the case of Nutrisa, we reduced promotional activity, which together with lower SG&A helped us double the EBIT margin when compared to the same quarter of last year. Looking forward to this segment, innovation will continue to drive our top-line performance. As well, we will continue to focus on expanding our brand presence and operational efficiencies. As discussed last quarter, we are pleased with the results of the coffee shops opened so far, and we will continue the opening of stores in third quarter. The dynamics of this segment are very interesting. Under the macroeconomic situation of our country, we expect consumer dynamics to stay in the same tenor and do not foresee any risk for hitting our guidance for this year. On a positive note, the environment opens the door to several inorganic opportunities that we are analyzing carefully to assure that our strategic path strengthens. Looking beyond 2019, we're not expecting significant changes in the consumption environment, and thus our top-line growth should remain pretty stable. As always, we will share our guidance for 2020 in our call on February. Having said that, we now open the call to your questions. Please go ahead, Sabi.
Thank you, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. To join the question queue, you may press star 1 on your telephone keypad. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing any keys. To withdraw your question, please press star 2. We will pause for a moment as callers join the queue. Our first question comes from Felipe Ucros with Scotiabank. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks. Good morning, Gerardo Andrea. Thanks for the space for questions. So I wanted to focus on a couple of things. One's on Megamex, and the other one may be on the one-timers that you have. So the first one has to do with the competition in the prepared guacamole category at Megamex, which you've mentioned in previous calls has been increasing a little, and to a certain degree they're competing with inferior products, and then you were exploring or implementing a process of rebranding with marketing that emphasizes more adequately the health benefits of your product versus the competition. So I wanted to ask you how that process is going and how the competitive environment is progressing around that. and then maybe I can do the other follow-up. Thank you.
Good morning, Felipe. Sure. As we mentioned in the previous quarters, there has been a very tough competitive environment in retail, only in retail at the guacamole category. So a lot of our clients have entered the space through private label, and pricing also has been very challenging. So what we did is we already made the rollout of our new packaging. So we shifted from bowls to clear cups with a new image, and that's going very smoothly. We are in the process of launching another brand in that space for the deli segment of retail. As you know, in our retailers in the United States have two places where we have our product, and we compete in both. One is fresh produce, and the other one is in deli. So we're launching a product for the deli segment. And so far, this has been in the last weeks, and we are pleased to see that our Holy Guacamole market share has increased in the last 4 weeks. So I think that our actions are in the right track, and we expect to continue to regain market share going forward.
Okay, that's very clear. Thanks a lot. And then the other one I wanted to ask you was around the one-timers in the quarter. You have the sale of the tuna vessel, but you also have the receivables issue in frozen. So I was wondering if you could tell us what the EBIT margin would have been without those, like an adjusted EBIT margin, if you will. And also if you could delve a little deeper into the receivables provision section of those one-offs, if you could give us some more details around what happened and what we can expect going forward. Thank you.
Okay, so we have three one-timers. The first one is is not in the other expenses. It's more in the SG&A that would be related to freight. So we changed the way we are booking our freights to be very, very conservative. So now we are seeing, to put it in a gross way, we are booking approximately 13 months instead of 12 months. So this would be a one-timer that will not be recurrent for the next for the following years. So that's placed in the SG&A. Second, you have the tuna vessel that is recorded in the other income. And third, we made a provision for bad receivables that we are studying right now. It's a one-timer. And what did this is we strengthened our internal controls. So that obviously slowed our growth in some segments that are very complex, including DSD, including street sales. So that's also a reason why our growth has slowed a bit compared to what we've been doing. So we'd rather favor some solid sales without any risk of having uncollectibles. As you know, with our accounting, we are we follow the rules, and when you see a probable uncollect item, you book it. So when we have a probable expense, we record it as simple as the accountant dictates. So that's behind those issues. We feel a little bit comfortable with the changes that we're doing in internal controls, and we don't expect this magnitude going forward. This would represent approximately 3% of the year-to-date sales. If we do it annually, it would be about 2.5%.
If you compare, for example, if you take out the fleet expense, the extraordinary one, in the preserve segment, that represents around 1 point of the EBIT margin.
Right.
So it would have been much, much better than last year.
And in frozen?
And in the case of frozen, the margin would have been 9% instead of 2%. So that will be better than, or, well, at least 1 percentage point better than last year.
Right.
Okay, great. That's super clear. So I'll leave it up for other analysts now so I don't take over the entire call. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1. Our next question comes from Alvaro Garcia with BTG. Please go ahead.
Hi, Gerardo, Andrea. Good morning, or good morning. Thanks for the call. Two questions from my end. One, on the cost environment, looking into 2020, we've seen a much stronger peso, and I was just wondering, you know, how you think of that heading into 2020. How much of a tailwind do you think that can be, considering there's a decent portion of your costs that are in dollars, and maybe some comments on soybean oil specifically into 2020 as well. That'll be my first question. I'll stop there and take that one first.
Good morning, Alvaro. I'm going to handle it to Andrea.
We are building the budget with an exchange rate of 20.05. So definitely we are expecting that at least it will remain more stable than what we have seen in the past. We haven't taken long-term positions in terms of our coverage because precisely it has been more stable than what we expected, at least when 2019 was starting. And that will leave some relief for our margins. However, as Gerardo mentioned, we are still building the budget on the details. And the only thing that we have pretty clear is that sales will remain growing at these rates, and it will be very tough to grow even higher than that. So probably keeping a sales growth between probably 5-7% is something that seems reasonable. In terms of margins, obviously, all the extraordinaries that we are reporting this year will make it, or will give some buffer for next year. But on the organic operation, we think that at least it will be easier or more reasonable to expect that our growth margins will continue to expand, something that we haven't seen in the last years because of the deterioration or the depreciation of the peso.
And in the SG&A, Alvaro, you will see some margin expansion, because even though we have one-timers this year, we're going to have some more expenses for next year, but overall, SG&A will be lower. So don't expect to see the one-timers 100% built in our next year or the benefit. And we are also seeing some pricing action, probably same as this year, and volume would be between flattish and low single digit.
That's clear. And then my second question, and thanks for that. That was very comprehensive. My second question is going back to MegaMex. We've seen this in the past, right? We've seen this sort of level of profitability in the past. The one thing that I noticed that was different was sort of the level of sales. So that at least your sales growth in dollar terms is low single digit. And I appreciate the comments that you've been gaining share over the last couple of weeks. But with the quarter specifically, would you say that, you know, were you a little bit more aggressive on pricing in guacamole specifically, or did you see steep volume decline? I trust that the salsa category is probably still performing well. I just was wondering if you could share a little bit more color on guacamole specifically. Thank you.
No, I think those were the dynamics that we have seen, and there was no specific or significant pricing. What you see in terms of profitability, as you mentioned, is that 2018 was an outlier the whole year. If we compare our numbers, last year we doubled the equity from Megamex. So we made $72 million in the third quarter of 2017. So if we take out 18, we grew 30% versus 17. So
yeah.
Honestly, we are unfazed about what's going on in Megamex and with the avocado. We are more encouraged about gaining share through our innovation than in pricing.
Great. Thank you very much.
And in the quarter, we started operations in our Colombia facility, and that will help to mitigate the volatility of avocado going forward. It's not that big, but it's some of our actions that are going to help to smooth this volatility.
That's a good point. Good point. Great. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Felipe Ucros with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys, me again. Sorry, looks like there's nobody else on the queue. So I wanted to see if I could ask another follow-on, which has to do with the coffee shops that you were that you announced last quarter. So I'm hoping, Gerardo, to see if you could give us a little more color about how that effort is going. And also I wanted to clarify something. I was talking to an investor, and somebody had the impression that the move with the espressos were actually separate stores, and I was telling them that I understood that it was within the ice cream shops. So I wanted to see if you could clarify a little bit that. And then if it is within the stores, have you at some point explored the possibility of doing actual standalone coffee shops?
Can you repeat the question that the investor told you, please?
Yeah, an investor that I talked to had the impression that the coffee shops were standalone, that they were separate from the actual ice cream shops. The way I understood it, it was within the ice cream shops, but maybe you can clarify that.
Your investor or our investor is right. It's a standalone because what we did in one store is that we share the space of the ice cream shop. But there are two separate shops, so there's very little overlap in our Nutrisa footprint to utilize the same space to build another store in the same space. That happened in Samara, that it's in Santa Fe, but probably we can have five of those. We don't, there's no marketing rationale to put some coffee in an ice cream shop where for the last 40 years, Nutrisa has been ice cream. And that is a strategy that we analyze and we don't want to follow. That's why the Lavazza stores and all the coffee shops going forward would be standalones under the same corporate structure, but they are standalones. That is correct.
And I imagine part of the strategy with this is that it will be very counter-cyclical versus the source, right?
Of course. That's the main strategic fit to smooth our seasonality on ice cream. Obviously, right now we have very few stores, but we like the dynamics going forward.
Okay, excellent. Thanks a lot.
This concludes the question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Gerardo Canavati for any closing remarks.
Thank you, Tavis. Thank you for your participation in the call. Please do not hesitate to contact us in the interim. Have a good day.
This concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating, and have a pleasant day.